You're listening to the Tennis.com podcast, and here are your hosts, Nina Pantic and Irina Falcone.
Welcome to Tennis.com podcast Inside the Tour. I'm Nina Pantic.
And I'm Irina Falcone.
In this episode, we recorded in Lake Nona, Florida, right by the home of the USTA National Campus, a really impressive place to say the least. I met with Kent Kinnear. He is the new head of men's tennis. He used to be the director of player ID and development. He's been working with the USTA since 2007, so kind of a veteran in the coaching leagues out here. He actually spent 11 years on the ATP Tour, got as high as number 24 in doubles and number 163 in singles, also played at Clemson, and enjoyed a short coaching stint at the University of Illinois, where he was coaching Kevin Anderson. So let's hear from Kent. And I just want to welcome you and thank you for your time.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
I just want to talk about how you got to the USTA and how you found yourself working. You're the head of men's tennis here.
Right. Yeah, it's new. But I started with the USTA probably about 10 years ago as a national coach on the men's side, working mostly with the younger boys. And did that for 3 years or 4 years, and then became director of player ID and development, which is 14 and under, boys and girls. So I've been in that position for about the last 6 years, until a couple weeks ago when I got this position. So, but before the USTA, I worked for the University of Illinois. I was an assistant coach under Brad Dancer for 2 years. Had a couple great years there. And then in the summertime, Rodney Harmon, who was in charge of men's coaching for the USTA, wondered if I would be interested in being the summer coach for a collegiate team that was going around to some tournaments. And so I did that, had a great time. John Isner was on that team and five other guys. It was a lot of fun. And at the end of that, Rodney was like, you know, would you be maybe interested in coming on board if an opening came about? And so a little less than a year later, it did. And so I've been with the USTA ever since.
So what does the head of men's tennis, what does that entail job-wise and day-to-day-wise? I mean, I know it's new, but just...
I'm just finding out. No, basically, it's the whole pathway on the men's side, all the way from the young junior boys through the teenage years, through collegiate, through pro tennis, transitional pro. The head of men's tennis basically is, working with all the national coaches on the men's side who are working with players along that whole pathway. And, really just trying to not have any holes in the pathway and try to have a great group of young players coming up and great pros out there playing. And, you know, the ultimate charge of player development is to help get players into the top 100 ATP and hopefully a Grand Slam champion. So everything's kind of geared towards that charge all the way down the pathway. So I'll kind of be helping oversee that.
Is a lot of it organizing coaches and players and travel and tournaments, or is it like your hands-on coaching with certain players, or is it both? Is it a mix?
Yeah, I'd say it's mostly right now going to be working with our coaches and figuring out their relationships with players that we're working a little bit more with or maybe supplementary with. Our national coaches in the younger years are responsible for big groups of players and having camps and really trying to keep the base wide. And then as the players get a little bit older, you know, it gets tougher and tougher. And so the numbers get a little bit smaller. And the coaches that are assigned to those birth years have, you know, working with a little bit smaller groups. And then all the way up to the pro tennis where a coach, if they're assigned, you know, they're not going to get assigned many players. It might be two players that they're really working with. So it's really managing that whole system and where can we help out as the national federation? Where can we help out the most that we can? And with our pros, some of them may need mental skills or they may need nutrition information or strength and conditioning, whatever. So we just want to help be a resource in whatever area they need some help with.
Are there any certain players you're most excited about right now, even if they're younger or current pros outside the top 100 or any names that you're pumped about?
Well, I would say one thing that's been really fun about this position is we've had the camp structure with these young kids in place for about 8 or 9 or 10 years. So to see the Francis Tiafos and the Riley Opelkas and the Tommy Pauls and, you know, all that group of, we go by birth years, those are mostly 97s, couple 98s, a couple 96s that are doing real well now. To see them breaking in like they are into the top 100 and so on is pretty exciting, you know. And I've worked through the camp structure. Any player that's basically born 1990, I would say 94 and younger, kind of I've gotten to know over the years through the camps. The ones that are a little bit older than that, I need to build the relationships with some of our top pros you know, like the Sam Querrey is a little bit older than that range. You know, I spent the summer with John Isner, so I know him a little bit. But just building relationships with them is going to be really important and try to help out any way I can.
And we're in Lake Nona at the UST National Training Center. What has been the transition to, because you must have moved here right when it opened,
yep.
right around then. So
yep.
what has been your experience seeing this place kind of come to life? I mean, it's really impressive.
It's been great. It's been really great. You know, I was involved a little bit on the planning side, not a lot, but just to kind of see it go from the blueprints to, you know, getting feedback on what's missing, what do we need to add? You know, we've got this budget. How can we, you know, we need to cut back in this area or whatever. But to see this come to fruition in a relatively short amount of time, really, is pretty amazing. And what's fun, too, is to be working here and people coming to visit. Everyone's just like, wow, this is such a great atmosphere, a great environment. And it's a lot of fun to work here. So, yeah, I couldn't be happier with this facility. And, you know, obviously it was tough to move from Boca and Del Rey. A lot of people had to move and the families, which isn't easy. But to be working in a place like this is a real treat.
You mentioned John Isner, but I know you worked at Illinois.
Yeah.
And I feel like college is similar in the sense that there's always these grand facilities, right? Mm-hmm. Everything. But mm-hmm. you worked, you were in the same year as when you get the finals with Kevin Anderson.
Right.
So how cool is that? I feel like that's a big part of his career is that he was so good in college and he
yeah.
was good at doubles and everyone forgets about that.
Yep. Yeah, no, that was really fun. And you know, when they were playing the semifinals in Wimbledon this year, I actually called Brad Dancer and I thanked him for giving me the opportunity to be an assistant coach back in like 06, 07. But because I reminisced about being in Tulsa during the All-Americans quarterfinal match, John Isner against Kevin Anderson, nobody was around, you know, and here's these two guys. And at this point, college, it was kind of going through that ebb and flow of, you know, there weren't a lot of players coming out of college and making a big run in the pros, and I couldn't really quite understand it, you know. And so I'm looking at these two guys, and I'm like, there is no reason why these guys couldn't be great pros, you know. It was so exciting to watch them, and then to see, you know, X amount of years later, them have that just epic battle at Wimbledon was just really special thing for college tennis, really, because those are two great products of great college programs where they got better and had a great team experience and have gone on to just represent everybody in the sport so well. Very exciting.
The college tennis thing is definitely ebbed and flowed. I feel like when I was in school, I went to UCLA,
uh-huh.
started in 2008, and Arena,
okay.
and I think same year, but then she turned pro out of school. But I feel like things change a lot in that maybe 5-10 year gap where all of a sudden college players are doing really well.
Yeah.
But you played at Clemson,
yeah.
and then you turned pro after?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I needed 4 years. My roommate my sophomore year was Jay Berger. He just played 2 years and went on to be like six in the world. So, you know, even back then you had – I mean, there were a lot of American players who went on and had very good careers in the pro levels, for sure. You know, and I just feel like the way the game's gone, where the average age of the ATP or WTA player is getting older, like they're playing longer, right? So, and it's more physical than ever. I mean, it's unbelievably physical. So there's no reason why college shouldn't be a great stepping stone for the players coming up, you know, because, you know, these colleges have unbelievable facilities, great coaches, great strength and conditioning, you know, and they're just great years to mature a little bit, get stronger, and really help their development. So I think college tennis is, you know, going to be a big part of the future pros coming out. But you're right, it is funny how it ebbs and flows. And I think right now we're definitely going to be in an upswing.
There's a few players now I think of, like Danielle Collins. I mean, she's
right.
top 50, top 40 right now in
yeah.
like full 4 years. I mean, it's doable.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. There's some great examples.
So you were ranked as high as number 24 in doubles and you were top 200 in singles. I think it's pretty cool when people, I mean, you're so ingrained in American tennis, and I feel like I looked up some of your highlights.
Okay.
And you played Pete Sampras when he was young,
yeah.
and Andre Agassi when he was young,
yeah.
and Indy, which would
you
have been
You did do your research.
Home.
Yeah.
I got creepy, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it just kind of seems to show that you've been a big part of American tennis kind of for years, and you would have played these American stars. And do you
yeah.
look back on, what's your... I mean, be like best memories or fondest memories.
Well, I mean, I played 11 years. There were a lot of great memories, and I went to a lot of, I mean, I love the travel. I love the camaraderie. You know, I always look back at, there was one, I was kind of trying to break through in singles and doubles a couple years out of college and had a chance to go to Asia and to try to get into some tournaments. But it was going to be tough. And it looked like the only way I was going to get in was in doubles. I remember hanging out looking for Brad Pierce, who was another great American player. he was the one player I could get into the Japan Open in with in doubles. And I was hanging out at the hotel waiting just to see, because back then, you know, we didn't have the cell phones and everything. But anyways, I approached him. He agreed to play with me, and we went and had an unbelievable week. Second round, we beat Edberg and Cash, who had both won the Wimbledon and the Wimbledon before. So for me to be on the court with those guys and to be able to know that I could return their serves, or I could, you know, kind of some of the mystique, I felt like I belonged more. So I always look at that match and that week as a breakthrough week for me, just from a mindset standpoint, you know, that if I worked hard and I could hang at this level. So I always look back at that as a big kind of a breakthrough and a highlight that week in Tokyo. Plus it helped out financially to let me play more. So, but yeah, I mean, I played in probably, I think I counted up once, close to 50 countries. So I just love I love that, you know, experiencing the different cultures and the relationships and, you know, got to play. I didn't play them a lot, but did get to play, you know, Pete and Andre and Boris Becker and Edberg and some of these guys that I really had a great admiration for, you know, growing up. And I look back very fondly at those years. A lot of fun.
I think it adds a level of, I don't know, I guess credibility, or more like if you're trying to tell a player something, they know, like, hey, you've been there for a decade and you made it, and you played all these great tournaments and won the tournaments and stuff. Is it a huge help?
I mean, I think it does help, yeah. I mean, it'll be fun. It's been a few years since I've been back to the Grand Slams. It'll be fun to get back to those venues. You know, I think I've been fortunate to have a really, you know, tennis has been unbelievable to me, and I've had the opportunity to experience it at a lot of different levels and places, you know, whether it's junior tennis or collegiate. I had an unbelievable experience at Clemson for 4 years, and then 11 years on the tour, which was phenomenal. And then, you know, I was away for a year or two, and then was doing some grassroots tennis, you know, and then I had an experience coaching 2 years at Illinois when we had a very good team. So, and then with the USTA, working with the really young ones. And so I feel very fortunate that I have been able to experience tennis from a lot of different angles. And, I think it is helpful to have that knowledge in this position, for sure, when you're talking about a whole pathway and a wide range of players that make up U.S. tennis, you know. So, I'm very excited, very excited.
I mean, college is kind of, I feel like, sometimes overlooked a little bit, but I think at the UST now, especially here, they're kind of embracing it.
Absolutely.
There's college matches that are on TV.
Right.
They're playing ties here. They have a facility like kind of specially made for college.
Right.
I think that's huge.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, some of those matches we've had here the last couple years have been phenomenal. And to get the exposure, Stephen Armitage, when he was in that position, did a great job just thinking outside the box and really bring in some new ideas. And you know, now Matt Clore is going to be in that position as a coach, helping out with the collegiate space from our staff. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of exciting things going on and a lot of great people involved, I think. And so very, very excited about the future of college tennis.
You mentioned travel. So are you going to be going then on the road? Is it just part-time? Is it just slams? Is it just with certain players? Like, how does your, I guess, next year would look?
Right, right. So I'll definitely be going to all the slams for a couple weeks at least. Hopefully longer if we're doing great. You know, I'll stay. And so hopefully it'll be 3 weeks I'll be there. So that'll be a little bit of a change these last few years because I haven't traveled that much internationally. And I think some of the major tournaments here in the States I'll go to. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't know for sure what my schedule will be like, but I know that it'll be made up of those tournaments for sure.
Is there going to be a big tournament this year, the Winter National? Are they hosting it here? Is that the first time?
Or Winter Nationals, a certain age group will be here, yeah. Some of the older age groups, so it's right after Christmas, yeah.
I feel like you used to be in Arizona, and
yep.
It was miserable. I remember playing that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I never played that one, but yeah, I did hear it could get pretty cold.
Yeah.
You think of Arizona as being hot, but at that time of year, it could be pretty chilly, so.
It was miserable, and like 8 a.m. matches. And
yeah.
It was so bad. Yeah, that's a good move. I mean, I feel like just having 100 courts,
there's
so much you can do here.
Yeah, yeah.
So you mentioned you have kids. You have 3 kids.
Yeah.
Young. Pretty young.
Yep.
Under 16?
14.
14.
14, 11, and 6.
And do they play? Do they care about tennis? Are they interested?
Well, you know what's interesting? I played basketball all the way until I went to college, until I went to Clemson. Some of my favorite sports memories were high school basketball in Indiana, where I grew up. So my oldest daughter has the basketball bug. She's totally into basketball right now, which is really fun. I try to work with her some on that and had a chance to help coach one of her teams. Actually, the last few years. So So she's really into basketball. My middle one, ATN, is not into sports that much. Kind of a very dreamy, very good artistic type young man. So I thought soccer might be a sport, but it really wasn't. So he loves basketball, but he doesn't play a lot of it. And then my youngest one, I think, might be a tennis player. He really loves tennis. He's hitting. He's six. I love hitting balls with him, and he also likes basketball. So it's been interesting, and I haven't pushed real hard. I want them to do what they want to do, but it's an interesting little journey as you try to make the best decisions possible for your kids and what's the best fit and so on. So, but they enjoy, they enjoy a lot of different activities and sports, and they're doing great.
At least your youngest will have the facilities here and the Next Generation program and all this stuff that they've initiatives here for like young kids under 10.
That's true.
Pretty big.
Yeah, that's very, very true. And Rita Gladstone's here, does an unbelievable job with that space. So they haven't quite moved here full time yet. So once they get here, though, I'm looking forward to getting them plugged into the programs.
And when you go to these tournaments, are you like, how hands on are you with players? Are you going to be on court? Are you going to be just helping facilitate stuff, just kind of day to day?
I think it'll probably depend a little bit, especially initially. I doubt I'm on court a lot trying to actually coach, unless it's some of the players I'm more familiar with and they want it, or their coaching situation wants it. I think in general right now I'm going to be a little bit more in the mode of building the relationships and seeing where they want some help and trying to coordinate that and just be as big a resource as possible. I think, Ola Malmquist, who's now head of coaching, he was head of women's tennis, and he was doing a lot of, coaching with Madison and so on. So I think the position is open to some of that, but I think it has to be obviously the right situation, and there has to be a real need, and it's what the player and the player's team, wants. So we'll play that by ear a little bit.
And the head of women's tennis, Kathy Rinaldi, I know really well. I know really well.
Yeah.
Is there a working relationship? Do you guys work together? Do you guys talk about, hey, like, we're new to this?
Yeah.
Or, a camaraderie?
Yeah, that's a great question, because Kathy and I actually probably 6 years ago traveled to Europe together for 3 weeks, and we had a great time. So, she is a lot of fun and does an absolutely great job. So we, about 2 weeks ago, had our annual coaches meetings here, and it was right after they announced all of the changes. And so a big part of our dialogue during that week is that we need to make each other better. All the coaches here need to make each other better. And as a team, we need to get better. And that includes men's and women's coaches doing things together and swapping ideas. And, because there's been – everyone's so busy, and it's pretty easy to kind of get in your silos. Even within the men's team, if you're in the junior – if you're in the junior space, you're not doing that much in the pro space and so on. So we want to break down some of those barriers and really have some – exchanges and things. So we've got some ideas that we've been working on, and we don't want to overwhelm anyone right out of the blocks, but we've got a list of things that we want to step by step start putting into make up more of our culture here that includes a lot of synergy between the men's and the women's side. So we're looking forward to that. And absolutely, Kathy's done a phenomenal job as as Fed Cup coach, and so much fun to work with, and a lot of passion and spunk, and she keeps us all on our toes, as you can imagine, I'm sure.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you. This has been perfect. I really appreciate your time. Okay. I think this is awesome.
Thank you very much. Well, thanks for coming to the campus.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
All right.
So we just heard from Kent Kinnear, and I think one of the most interesting things about that interview is the fact that he's transplanting his life to Lake Nona in Orlando because the USTA decided to open this massive facility here, and everyone kind of had to migrate. Irina moved here as well, is actually a new resident of Lake Nona, a new homeowner. So what's it like to just be like, all right, now I'm going to move to Lake Nona?
So a few years ago, before I moved here, I was in Jupiter, Florida, living with my parents, actually. And I was heading to Boca Raton every single day to train. And it was a heck of a drive. And I found out that everybody was moving over to Orlando, or Lake Nona, rather. And if someone would have told me that I was moving to Orlando and renting a place there and, making my residence there, I probably would have laughed in their face. But to be honest, it's been one of the smoothest transitions I think I've ever had. At the time, Lake Nona was actually pretty dead. I know 4 years ago, people still talk to me to this day. They're like, oh my God, it used to be just a one-lane road. Like, there was nothing around. And there's so many things that are coming up. There's a huge town center that is being built. It's a 4 million square foot, pretty much masterpiece that they're creating here. And it's just such a good vibe. I think it's been a great thing. The fact that they were able to have this land gifted to them and they built 100 courts. It's just great because it really is, I think, making it more community-based, and it's just more people are playing tennis, and that's really what the USTA wants, right?
It's weird to think that there was nothing here a few years ago, and when you think of Orlando, it's like Disney World, Universal Studios, Harry Potter. I just don't think tennis, but because the USTA moved here and just kind of out of nothing created 100 courts, this impeccable facility for pros, for college players, for juniors, for people starting out. I mean, it's just turned into this, it'll be a mecca. I mean, it's already kind of a mecca. And the fact that pros like all bought in and were like, hey, we're going to move and buy houses in this like little suburb area called Lake Nona. It's just wild to imagine, but they pictured it and they made it happen. And it's successful already because people are all here and they're all working together, which is kind of the point, right? You want Americans training with Americans and pushing each other to create the next big Grand Slam champions. I mean, it kind of makes sense.
So USTA is actually extremely open to inviting other players. I know last year during the Miami tournament, in between the Miami and Charleston tournament, there were a few girls that actually came to train here. They weren't American, but because they knew someone that was training there, I think Marina Rakovic and Mandy Minella, Bethany Maddock, obviously she trains in Phoenix, but there was a little window between Miami and Charleston, so they were all like, hey, let's go train at USTA, and they loved it. I think it's a great place, whether or not you're American or not, especially for the pros. I mean, there's Australian girls that were here earlier this year, right before the Europe swing, and Lizette Cabrera, actually, she stayed with me, and she loves it here, too. It's just such a great spot. You really don't need anything else. As a tennis player, I know, I'm not saying that's super regimented and all you're doing is playing tennis 24/7, but there is a lot to do. They just opened up a Drive Shack, which is on the same variety as Topgolf, and the mall is not far away. You know, you have every single store that you can possibly imagine. So they really made it into a perfect little living town. And the fact that the airport is so close, that is just so huge. I mean, there's nothing worse than getting off a plane and having to drive an hour plus to get somewhere. And it's literally 10 minutes away. So that's such a huge advantage.
Another thing that Kent talks about, or at least I talked about to him, was about how he used to be professionally ranked. He was top 200 in singles, top 30 in doubles. And people kind of, I feel like it's hard to figure out all these people that work for the USTA. There's so many people that work for the USTA from the ground up. And you hear the big names, the famous names and stuff, the coaches, but then you kind of forget what their stories are. In his case, though, he was a legitimate player. And I asked him whether or not that made him more credible as a coach because he went into coaching right away. Well, soon after he finished his career, and then eventually he's moved on to these bigger and bigger roles. He's now the director of men's tennis for the USTA. Kind of a huge thing because, like, literally overseeing every male player in American tennis. But with him, though, I was like, so does you being a past pro and, like, a really good one help you? I mean, what's your take when you meet a coach and they're like, hey, by the way, like, I was top 40. I played all the Grand Slams, like, multiple times. I kind of think that adds a little bit of respect, right?
Absolutely. I think one of the easiest transitions that players do seek out after they're done playing is to go into coaching. Whether it's, you know, you're teaching five-year-olds or whether you're teaching adults, it's still coaching of some variety. So just because you have been a great player does not translate into, hey, I'm going to be a great coach. It's completely different. All of a sudden, you're seeing the game in a completely different way. I know I had a coach once tell me, he's like, I've never lost a match from the stands. So just because you know how to play tennis does not mean it's going to translate as a great coach and vice versa. But I'm super excited to see what Kent's going to do. I know that he's been super ambitious. He's actually listened to our podcast, so that's pretty awesome. Super excited to see what he's got in store for the men.
It's such a common transition also to go from playing to coaching. I feel like a lot of players try it. Maybe they don't love it right away, but a lot of them dive into it. It just seems like a natural move.
I agree. I know that some of the people that I've talked to recently have asked me whether or not, you know, I'd coach them. Or when I was 16 years old, I was asked by two parents to coach their 8-year-old at the time. And when you're 16, I mean, you're coaching an 8-year-old, you really don't know what the heck you're doing on the court. I went out there a few times, you know, hit with her. She won her first title with me at like 9 years old. I was pretty excited. I was like, holy cow, like, you know, she's actually getting better. It was really exciting for me. And then she ended up getting a scholarship for tennis, and she's been doing great things. And it was pretty cool to see that even though I was 16, they trusted me enough with their daughter. Just because you are a player does not necessarily mean you'll be a great coach, but you do have some insight that just regular coaches that have never played will not have.
Right. I agree. It's cool that you've dabbled in it already. Okay, so that's it for this episode. We talked a little bit about the USTA. We met Kent Kinnear. We learned a little bit more about how the organization works. We learned a little bit more about Lake Nona and all the move here. So I hope everyone enjoyed this episode. This has been Inside the Tour. I've been Nina Pantic.
And I've been Irina Falcone.
Thanks for listening.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.